going to do like a very quick overview of the 18 chapters and bring out the highlights of the chapter. And I don't know, just I'll do whatever I can to try to bring up the different points, and then you can ask some questions. So the first six chapters deal with karma yoga. Of course, in chapter 2, there's all of the elements are present because it's the content summarized. And of course, chapter 6 deals with Ashtanga yoga. But mainly, from chapter 2 all the way to chapter end of chapter 5, it's mainly karma yoga. This is the main thrust of the teaching. Approaching bhakti through practicing karma yoga. Because karma yoga is easy and it purifies one from material attachments and the enjoying mood. So Krishna is recommending to perform one's occupational duty and then offer the fruits to him. And of course chapter 1 is just a historical background. The first 27 verses is describing the Kurukshetra battlefield and all the details therein. And then from text 28, Arjuna has his doubts. And you know that he gives his reasons for not fighting. The first one, we'll see if you can remember it too. What's the first reason that he gives for not fighting? Remember? Compassion for his relatives. Right? What's the second one? Sadananda? You know? Huh? No. No. The second reason. Huh? Nope. That's the third one.
Enjoyment.
Yeah, he's concerned about enjoying, because he gives these three verses. You know, has Govinda, and he says, "Oh, Govinda, how, you know, what's the use of ka priti sajjanardana? What pleasure will we derive?" And there, boga, priti, sukha, all these words are in these three verses. Then the third reason is sin, papam eva. There will definitely be sin, killing the aggressors. And then the destruction of dynasty, kulakshaya. And then later in the second chapter, he gives the fifth reason, which is indecision. So then at the end of all that, he just sits down on the chariot and puts his Gandiva bow down, and he's lamenting, crying. His eyes are filled with tears. Ashru kulakshanam, right? So then Krishna sees him in this condition and then asks him, you know, what's going on? Why are you lamenting like this? Where has this impurity come from? And Arjuna gives a few more arguments, still kind of arguing with him. And then finally, out of complete confusion and exasperation, he surrenders to Krishna in text 7. And he offers himself as a disciple. So it's a very significant point. The reasons that he gives is very significant. And then this point of him surrendering in text 7. When you're reviewing, you should especially review the first and last purports of each chapter, particularly. Because they're proper. Introduces the chapter, summarizes points, and then at the end he does the same thing. So these commentaries are very important. And then the ones in important verses, like 2-7, it's also, I mean, there's many verses that are important, but there's that one particular. And Karpanya dosha upada svabhava prichamitam dharma samula cheta. So then in text 10, as Rasa Sandhi, that the relationship changes because now Krishna has agreed to accept his tutorship, tutelage. And now he becomes Krishna's uchinik, his disciple. So from text 11, Krishna begins to give his teachings, the first in the book, from Asochan Anvasochastvam, Pragyavarang Shabashase, and he kind of sobers Arjuna up by chastising him a bit. And there is the no death for the soul, all those verses, which apply to the first objection, or the first doubt. Because material compassion for the relatives is mitigated by understanding that they're not their bodies, they're spirit souls, and they can't be killed, and that they have to die anyway. And it's natural for people to change their bodies when the old body gets old and worn out, just like you change clothes. And the soul cannot be harmed by any of the weapons that Arjuna has, by his fire weapons, by his wind weapons, by his water weapons, or by his Gandiva bow and his swords and everything. Achedyo yam adhayo yam akledyo shoshi evacha. So then Krishna summarizes all of that in the last verse, number 31. And he says that, therefore you should not lament, because the soul can never be killed. And that is for the first doubt. Then the second doubt about enjoyment is approached in text 31 to 38. And Krishna couches his karmakanda teaching in varnashram principles. Because he says for kshatriyas, there's no better engagement than fighting a religious war, dharma yudha. And generally kshatriyas are very happy because then they get a great opportunity to fight and go to heaven if they lose, and or win the kingdom if they win. So it's an all-win situation, win-win situation. So you should just fight because you'll enjoy either way. You'll enjoy a kingdom if you win, and if you lose, you'll enjoy it in heaven. So therefore, your doubt about enjoyment is now defeated or rectified, clarified. So then from text 39, he begins his teachings on Buddha Yoga or Nishkam Karma Yoga, which are basically the same thing at this point. Later, Buddha Yoga in chapter 10 means something higher, but at this point it means Nishkam Karma Yoga. And this refutes Arjuna's third objection or doubt about sin. Because if you just perform your occupational duty with detachment as a matter of duty, if you fight for the sake of fighting without considering happiness and distress, victory and defeat, etc., then you'll be free from sin. You won't be getting any of the reactions for the work. So just do this Buddha Yoga. So in chapter 2, Krishna's throwing everything at Arjuna all at the same time. And then he talks about Buddha Yoga and how the person comes to the transcendental platform and rises above the flowery words of the Vedas, the lower level of religion, which was given in the third section, Karmakanda section. And he wants Arjuna to come up above that. He wants him to rise above Karmakanda in Buddha Yoga section. So he's preaching him to come above that. Chai Vedya Nishtrai Gunya Bhavarjuna. He says rise above this Karmakanda. So, then you will attain divine consciousness. Tada yogam avapsyasi. So then Arjuna asks, well, what are the symptoms of one in that, on that level? How does he sit? How does he speak? How does he walk? So then Arjuna answers those questions which have deeper meanings, which I'm sure you already reviewed. You already went through those things. And so that's the end of chapter 2. In chapter 3, because Krishna threw everything at Arjuna at one time, therefore he's a little confused. So in chapter 2, you have all of these levels. You have Karmakanda, you have teachings of Jnana, and you have Karma Yoga also. But the main thing is that Krishna is telling Arjuna to rise above the ordinary conventional teachings of religion given in the Shrutis as Karmakanda, and that's from 239 to 253. That's an important part, from coming from Karmakanda to Karma Yoga. These two platforms. So then in chapter 3, Krishna begins to explain Karma Yoga. He's introducing these ideas, why someone should start on this level, because people are pushed by the modes of nature. If you're not a great rishi on this higher level, then you should just begin at this level. Because everyone is nahi kashchit kshanapapi jatu tishjata karma krit karyate yavasha karma sarva prakriti jera gunai. Everyone's forced to act helplessly. So he shouldn't restrain his senses of action and just meditate on the sense objects, but just work and give up the fruits of the work. That is renunciation enough. So then, of course, verse number 9 is very important. Yagyartart karmano yartat. The shloka. This is the main thing in chapter 3, that everyone must work because the force of the material energy. Therefore, work for the Supreme. Tad artam karma konteya. Work for his benefit. Then Krishna describes from 17 that even for people who are above the modes, who are already self-realized, who are atmarati, satisfied in the self, atmatripta, they should also perform karma yoga to set an example for others. So this is another reason why one should do karma yoga. Just like Prithu Maharaj and Priyavrata and so many great Vaishnavas who are Mahabhagavats in the Bhagavatam, they also did karma yoga. And of course, Prithu is an avatar of Vishnu. But even he was doing his karma yoga. And Krishna gives the example of Janak Maharaj, who was also a self-realized king. And he himself, Krishna, he gives himself as an example. And then after stressing duty according to one's occupational position, one's psychophysical nature, according to the modes, why one should perform his duty, it's dangerous to perform another's duty, better to perform your own duty, even if imperfectly performed, than another's duty, then Arjuna is wondering why one has to be so strict to follow one's own duty. And, you know, that if he doesn't, he'll fall down, and that everyone's forced to act by the modes of nature. Therefore, everyone has to follow so many rules and regulations. And what is that energy which forces men to act sinfully, even as if against their will? And then Krishna describes the modes of nature, the modes of passion and lust. So the last section is how to conquer lust. And after Krishna describes how to conquer lust, then he's reminded of how he told this to Vivaswan so many millions of years ago, because he's Arjuna is in the same line and has the same duty as Vivaswan, and he has to also give instructions to the citizens to help them become situated in their duty, thereby free themselves from lust, teach them how to conquer their own lust. So then he says, oh, I told this yoga system to Vivaswan so many millions of years ago. Imam Vivasvatam Yogam Proktavanaham Avyanyam. And then Arjuna asks, how is it that you instructed him? Krishna then was kind of cornered by Arjuna by his question to reveal his divinity, that he's the Supreme Lord, and that although both of them have taken many births, Krishna can remember everything, but Arjuna cannot. And that Krishna says that although I am unborn, my body never deteriorates, and I appear in millennium after millennium to revive the principles of religion. After that, he gets back to the subject of Karma Yoga from 11 to 15. Somehow he, in an interesting way, he brings the subject back. And he begins describing how to work as a sacrifice from 16 onwards. He analyzes work, and he makes the point many times that although working, a person who is detached, he's not affected by sinful reactions. Again and again he makes the same point. Here we have this mental picture of Arjuna, you know, offering ghee into a fire as a priest, you know, dressed up like a Brahmin doing a yajna, because Krishna's telling him that that his work can be done as a sacrifice. Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir Brahmagna Brahmanahutam. So this verse is the end of that section, and it summarizes, it introduces this point that the Havir and Agni and butter and fire, and this is being offered as a sacrifice, and there's many different kinds of sacrifices that one can do which are approved in the Vedas according to the different types of people. So Arjuna is a Kshatriya, so he should perform his work as a Kshatriya, and work and fight and do that as a sacrifice, and that's also bona fide. So therefore Krishna gives a list of different kinds of sacrifices that people perform. And he's teaching Arjuna that there's so many different ways to sacrifice. Not that everybody has to go into the forest and just sit and do meditation. He says the results of the sacrifice is to attain a knowledge, and to further that knowledge and to confirm that knowledge, and to actually practice the yajnas properly, one has to approach the spiritual master and get instructions from him about the absolute truth. So there Krishna is stressing attaining knowledge, and he glorifies knowledge as the way to attain perfection. And at the end he tells him to get up and fight. So Arjuna is again confused, because Krishna stressed knowledge so much, and he seems to have told him to give up this karma in some places, which we reviewed way back when, a few months ago. So he asks a question that begins chapter 5. You know, what's better, working or renouncing? And then Krishna says, do both. That's his answer. So in chapter 5, Krishna describes how the karma yogi attains liberation. This is the important factor of chapter 5. There's the section from 17 to 26, how he attains liberation. Krishna describes more about nishkam karma yoga in verses 7 to 12. Then he analyzes it in the three doers from 13 to 16. Then he describes how the karma yogi attains liberation and passes through the jnana stage. He attains knowledge and becomes detached, and he becomes disinterested in external sense objects. He becomes very peaceful within. Everything is focused within. His happiness is within. His enlightenment is within. And at the end of chapter 5, Krishna introduces the Ashtanga Yoga in a preliminary sense, in two verses. And that brings us to chapter 6, where Krishna describes Ashtanga Yoga. And at the end of that description, he says that the yogi is better than the ascetic and better than the fruitive worker, and he's better than the jnani. Therefore, one should be a yogi. And of all the yogis, the one who knows the verse? Madgatenantaratma, he thinks of me within, and Shravan, as faith, Bhajateyo mam, and he worships me with love. He's the best. So this last verse is extremely important, and it is the springboard for the middle six chapters. So the first six chapters, Krishna describes jnana and yoga, karma yoga, as a means to purify the heart. This is one way to approach Krishna. It's not the direct way, it's the indirect way. But why does Krishna describe all of these things? What's the reason? Can anyone say?
To attract those who are engaged in other forms of yoga.
Yeah, to attract others to come to attract others to the Gita, and to bring them into the conclusion of the Gita. Any other reasons? Was there any questions like this on your previous test? Why Krishna describes all these things? Can anyone think of some other reasons? Why does Krishna go through all the trouble? Why doesn't he just say, Sarva Dharmam Prityaja, Man Mana Bhava Man Bhakto, and just finish it all off? That's a kind of correlated point to the first one.
But also you said that the all kind of interests that we have, the interest sort of aspect of Krishna.
Correlated to your first point. To attract those people who have other interests and who can't surrender immediately, and they doing jnana or karma or something. And they can relate to the Gita. To kind of draw them in to the school of bhakti. Yeah, Rabbi? To show how bhakti is superior to these other yoga systems. What else? Then just right into bhakti. Okay, that's valid. Remember, in chapter 6, 647, the commentary, Prabhupada says, in order to understand bhakti yoga minutely, one has to understand these other yoga systems. So, because bhakti contains all of these other components. So to really know bhakti well, you have to know these other components. You have to know about renunciation. You have to know about detachment from the fruits. You have to know about meditation. All these things. All of these things are included within bhakti. So that also gives another reason to understand that bhakti is the best. Okay, now I'll just write some points on the board. We'll just kind of go through.
Krishna introduces the principle of surrender.
Another verse? Another verse? 7:14. No, 7:14. Do you know the verse? Okay.
7:16, Krishna describes the mixed motivations that make up Mishra Bhakti. Mishra Bhakti, because he's just introducing Bhakti for the first time in the Gita in chapter 7. So he's talking about Mishra Bhakti. You know, the mixed motivations of those who approach him. I mean, these are just the major things here. Krishna introduces pure devotion here. Who knows this verse?
8:14. No, that's close. That's chapter 9. It begins with Ananya. Yananya Cheta Sadatam Yomam Smariti Nityasa Sulaba Nityas part. Nitya Yukdasya Yogina. This verse is important. Pure devotion.
And 8:28, Krishna proves how pure devotion is superior to other paths. Who knows this verse?
Nobody knows this one? Ramu? Huh? Vedeshu, Jagyeshu, Tapashu Chaiva.
Then chapter 9, from 4 to 10, Krishna describes his Achintya Shakti, his inconceivable potencies.
How he's spread everywhere, maintaining everything, and at the same time he's aloof and has his own program.
And later, from 26 to 33, Krishna glorifies pure devotion. Ananya Bhakti. We're still in chapter 9. Krishna tells how to perform pure devotional service.
What's the verse?
Manmana Baba Magbhakto.
Right?
Four things. Think of me.
Yes. These four things.
Okay.
I wrote these points when I had to give a class on the whole Gita in one class once at the manor for some students that came. I wrote all these points down.
So here, Krishna explains the dynamics of bhakti.
In other words, that he's the source of everything. He has all opulences. Aham sarvasya prabhava mata sarvam pravartate iti madva bhajanti mam. Those who know my opulence, they worship me. Buddha bhava samamrita. And then the other verses describing their relationship, how those who worship him, how they do it, with all of their heart, constantly engaging, and how they're always hearing and chanting with each other, enlightening one another,
and they can't live without hearing and chanting about Krishna. And how Krishna, and how they, those who are engaged in this way, Krishna gives them Buddha Yoga and enlightens them and clears away everything, all the darkness from the heart. And 10:19-42, Krishna discloses his opulences. These are called vibhutis. And 11:54, Krishna declares that he can be understood or seen, can be seen only by pure devotion, pure devotional service. Then at the end of this, Krishna, in chapter 8 to 12, he describes the progressive stages of bhakti. We spent so much time going over those. Right, remember? And then at the end, from 12 to the end, Krishna gives the qualities. He lists the qualities that come from devotion. So these are, the essential things that's happening in the middle six chapters. And it's all about bhakti. So this gives you a clear perspective on the major points and how Krishna is talking only about bhakti in these middle six chapters. And then how it all springs from this last point, last verse of chapter 6, Yoginama Pasarasha. But the main point of chapter 11 is that he can be seen by pure devotion. This is the real philosophical important point. Yeah, okay. There's no questions, then we can just go to the last six chapters. So, Arjuna asked these six questions which begin the last six chapters. He wants to know what is Prakriti Purusha, Kshatra Kshatragyam, and Gyanam and Gyayam. He wants to have a clear understanding of these things. And Krishna promised that he would deliver his devotee in chapter 12, verse 7. So now he's giving the knowledge by which he can do that. Wants to give knowledge whereby Arjuna can rise above the modes of nature. This is why he is giving this last six chapters, other than to attract the Gyanis also, and people that maybe they don't have so much attraction for devotional or devotional sentiments for Krishna. They are attracted by the knowledge about the modes of nature and like Sankhya philosophy. But Krishna is also describing these six chapters in order to provide the knowledge which is necessary to fix Arjuna in his practice of bhakti. As he described in chapter 15, that one who has approaches bhakti has to have detachment. In order to retain one's detachment, he has to continue sharpening his weapon of detachment with discrimination. So discrimination is in the form of knowledge. And he's just also telling Arjuna how he can rise above the modes of nature. Because in order to really serve Krishna, one has to have the same quality as Krishna, above the gunas. He has to come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. That means having the same quality as God,
being one with God, not that he merges into God, but that he has, he's on the same platform, the spiritual platform, then he can serve Krishna. So, Brahmabhuta for the impersonalist means becoming one with God in the impersonal sense. But those who are devotees, Brahmabhuta means something different, becoming Krishna's servant. And also he shows that this, the goal of jnana is to come to bhakti, which people generally don't understand. So chapter 13 is an overview or a synopsis, or we can say it's an outline of the whole last six chapters. So all of the, it has sutras, so the basic philosophy is given. And everything stems from this verse 22, as we said, Purusha prakriti stohi bhunkte prakriti janganam karanam guna sangasya sarasat yoni janmasu. So the Purusha, the living entity, is coming to enjoy the prakriti, and little does he know that the prakriti is the gunas intertwined within it. So the prakriti contains the gunas. Therefore, when he comes in contact with it, he becomes conditioned by the gunas. So the last six chapters describe that, that conditioning, how the living entity comes in contact with the modes, how it's conditioned. In chapter 14, that whole thing is described. Exactly how the modes affect him in so many different ways. And then at the end of chapter 14, how he can free himself from those modes of nature. What's the verse that you're supposed to learn for chapter 14? Is it Mam Chayo Vyabhicharan, that one? 14.4. 14.4. So Krishna summarizes again that the way to get free from the modes is to perform devotional service and come to the Brahman platform through bhakti. So the jnanis, they don't realize that you can come to the Brahman platform through bhakti. So he's stressing this. But even when we're doing bhakti, we have to use discrimination and we have to have detachment. So he gives the example of the banyan tree and tells us we have to cut ourselves away from this banyan tree of the material world because it's very entangling, it's very temporary. So he stresses detachment in chapter 15 in the beginning. And for the living entity who doesn't become detached and approach the Lord, then he just gets bound up in the material world. Prakriti stani karshati. Because he's the Purusha who is stuck in the Prakriti. It's an expansion of this verse 13.22. And he's being pulled by the Prakriti, his mind and senses. And therefore Krishna describes the transmigration of the soul, how his conceptions of life bring him from one body to another, and how he gets another body with another set of senses, which are attracted to another set of sense objects, and he enjoys the senses, and he becomes their slave. And for those people, Krishna appears to them, he maintains the living entities in the form of the sun, the moon. He enters their stomach as Vaishvanara and helps them to digest food. He enters their heart and he reminds them all the things that they want to enjoy and he gives them knowledge how they can enjoy them. But for those who want liberation, he comes as Vedavyas and gives the Vedas. So Krishna describes the Trishloki Shastra, the essence of the Vedic knowledge in these verses. And he stresses that he is the Purushottam. He is the best of all the living beings. That this is the essence of all the Vedic knowledge. And it's the confidential message of the Vedas. And one who knows Krishna, then he knows everything. And then he does bhakti. 16 describes the extreme high point and low point of the banyan tree, the divine and the demoniac natures. Krishna also, he's explaining this because He wants to stress that following the Vedic injunctions are important to bring one from the demoniac life in the lower modes to the divine life in the higher mode of goodness. That one must follow Shastra. As one sees form only with the eyes, he doesn't see with the ears or the nose. So similarly, one understands religion only through the Vedas. He has to follow the Vedas if he actually wants to come above the lower modes. And then he can, by making such a graphic description of the demons and what the divine are like, and saying that if you want to be divine, you have to follow the Vedic injunctions. So it's stressing that people must do this. And then chapter 17, Arjuna begins the chapter asking this important question about the people that have faith and they're good people, but they don't follow the Vedas. Then Krishna says, well, then their sacrifice, their austerity, and their charity is only reflected from the modes in their heart. They're following only the modes in their heart, and that's such activities are useless. They're not really elevating them because they're still locked in to their particular mode of nature, and they're just doing it according to that. So for them, their guru, their shastra is the mode of nature and their mind. And it doesn't really help them. And they use it as something which substitute the Vedic injunctions and Vedic authority. So when you give up Vedic authority, you get nowhere fast. What's the verse you have to learn for chapter 16? Yeah, Shastram Vinam Utsrija. Yeah. That's good, because that's the conclusion of that's the important point in chapter 16. And chapter 17, you have a shloka for that? No. Right. And as you know, as we just did, chapter 18 summarizes everything. And Krishna goes all the way back to describing karma yoga in the first 12 verses. And he says that because sannyas means giving up, you know, selfish activities, and tyag means giving up the selfish enjoying mentality of the fruits of the work, giving up the fruit of the work, so therefore they're the same, because it means up giving up this enjoying mood. And he analyzes everything in 13 to 18 in a summary of Vedanta. And then he begins again talking about different activities in the modes of nature, all the way up to 48. Krishna describes the varnashram, how to become free from the modes of nature by performing one's occupational duty as a sacrifice for the Lord in his mind. And he offers that work to God. And then again from 49 to 55, he is describing Jnana Yoga and how Jnana Yoga leads to bhakti. And from 56 onwards, he's talking about pure devotion, all the way to the end. Okay, are there any questions? Includes that the only way one can purify himself and rise up in this material world to the higher modes and become divine is to follow the scriptures. Particularly, he's talking about following, you know, the injunctions for one's varna and ashram. But, yeah, I mean, you can apply that to bhakti, pure devotion also. He summarizes Vedanta and the section of Gyan of the last six chapters. It just so happens that it's 13 to 18. It summarizes 13 to 18. Right? That's easy to remember. There, Krishna gives the main verses, adishtanam tata karta karanam cha vidak cheshta. That the five factions, factors of action are given, with daiva as the super cause of all of them. So someone who has knowledge, he knows that the super soul is the prime mover, and that we are just small, somewhat insignificant motives or constituents of work. And Krishna confirms that later in Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Hridayeshu Arjuna, that the Lord is the one who is directing us. Go, Brahmananda.